And now,
great to be back.
Back to the Bill Frank Radio Show.
Awesome.
And your host, Bill Frank.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to the Bill Frank Radio Show on KVTA News Talk 1520. I'm bringing fresh perspectives to Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is potpourri. Each of my guests has an interesting subject, no two of which are related. My next guest believes we have a crisis of competence at the University of California educational system. He objects to the corrupting effect of political activism in the UC system. We'll discuss his findings based on a study by the California Association of Scholars prepared for the regents of the University of California. John Ellis is president of the California Association of Scholars and a professor emeritus at the University of California, Santa Cruz. Dr. Ellis received his BA and PhD from the University of London. Prior to teaching at UC Santa Cruz, he was a professor at the University of Wales, the University of Leicester, and the University of Alberta. Joining us from Northern California. Hi, John. How are you today?
Fine, thanks. Good to be with you.
Well, thank you so much for being my guest. Now, you find in your report to the regents of the UC system that UC campuses are liberally biased. You know, for those of us living in California, this really doesn't come as any great surprise. What is surprising is the data that you've collected to support your position. So before we get into the details, why is this important since many of us living in California already know the liberal bias in the universities?
Well, it's the extent. I mean, people often say that the academy is always left biased, and traditionally that's been true. But if you go back to studies done in, say, 1969, that's about 40 years ago, you find something like 2-1, two liberals to one conservative on campus. So that's enough to tilt the campus already. But by 30 years later, that's 5-1. So it's a strong increase. Now, about the year 2000, the rate of the tilt begins to accelerate very sharply. So while it took 30 years to go from 2-1 to 5-1, it took only 5 years to go from 5-1 to 8-1. And then if you look at the junior ranks at Berkeley, say, now the junior ranks are the people just recently appointed. So in other words, when all the older people retire, that's what the university is going to look like. The hirings of the last 10 years, which are represented by the junior assistant professor and associate professor ranks at Berkeley, the tilt in those is astonishing. I mean, at the assistant professor, which is the most recent hires, it's about 60-1. The associate professors, about 30-1. So in other words, the university of tomorrow is not just going to be tilted. It's going to be a monopoly. And monopolies are lousy for everybody. Monopolies are lousy in the economic sphere because you don't get competition, you get people lazy, you get product deteriorating in quality. On a university campus, when you have a monopoly for one side or for the left, what you're going to face inevitably is laziness, complacency, and gradually less and less intelligent thinking.
All right.
You need a clash of ideas always.
All right,
in the economy and in academic life to keep people on their toes and keep people performing really well.
My guest is Dr. John Ellis. And, John, I have two questions. One is real immediate. You talk about the younger faculty members are more solidly left-oriented than the older faculty members. But doesn't that just parallel the population in general, that younger people are always more progressive than older people? And as they get older, they have children, they get families, they have mortgages, they tend to become more conservative.
Well, there's some truth to that. But not the degree that you're seeing now. I mean, in other words, the tilt you're talking about never reaches 64 to nothing. You know, those demand among the young. I mean, the young tilt left, but they don't tilt left by those incredible numbers. Also, these are not quite what you'd call young people. Associate professors, you know, typically people around 40 years of age. They're a bit beyond that. And also, these are not just left. These are radicals. They're not going to change. I mean, radical leftism is a religion. The degree to which people will rethink that cannot be expected to be very much, I think.
All right.
The older, funnily enough, I mean, the older guys, the professors, are their liberalism is much more tolerant and much more open to other ideas. But the younger people are actually much more determined in their leftism.
All right, my guest is Dr. John Ellis. We're talking about the corrupting effect of political activism in the University of California system. The other thing that you mentioned that I want you to comment on is the rapid increase in the shift to the left starting in the year 2000 to where we are today. Why the year 2000? What was so seminal about that year, and why has it accelerated at the pace that it has?
Well, my guess is this, that when you have a 2-to-1 split, which you had in 69, the pattern of academic life is pretty normal. Let's say people are getting hired more or less by merit. There's not too much bias. So it takes quite a while. It takes another 30 years to go from 2-to-1 to 5-to-1. But once you reach 5-to-1, you know, you're at that situation where a collapse happens. In other words, the tilt is now strong enough that all the new hires are going to be affected by that tilt. So what happens is in those 30 years, you very gradually reach that point in about the around the year 2000 where the tilt is so strong that it now takes over completely and there's a collapse.
All right. Now, for people who are listening to the sound of our voice and they don't have college-age children or college-age grandchildren, they may be going, so what? I just want to bring it home as to what the so what might be. First of all, let's start with just the moral and the legal objections to what's going on here. First of all, this might be injurious to our democracy because of the tilting, as you say, to the left. More importantly to me is the misuse of state funds, because remember, the UC system and the Cal State system are both funded by our tax dollars. So that is all a very disturbing factor as well, as the political funded resources that are getting used for these private leftist uses, as it were. Those pretty fair assessments for the average Joe or Jane listening to the sound of our voice, John?
Absolutely. I mean, in a democracy, the one party doesn't get to use the organs of the state to keep itself in power. I mean, the elections are on a level playing field. When you get an entire institution, you know, the state universities, devoted to the promotion of leftism, that's undemocratic. I mean, you mustn't use taxpayer money for that kind of thing. And but also, of course, it means that if you can't serve two masters. If your aim is to educate kids, that means getting them to understand all sides of an issue, right? But getting them to analyze issues carefully from different sides. If your aim is to get them to vote left, that's a very, very different aim. You're then not going to want them to see all sides of the issue. You want to see one side of the issue. Now, that is a radical departure for universities. That means that you don't any longer put a priority on having students learn how to think for themselves, learning the process of analysis. Your priority now is on making sure that they get to think the right way, the way the professor wants them to think. And that isn't an education at all. That's not teaching them how to think.
No, that's indoctrination. But let me take the other side of that argument, if I can, John, for just a moment, because it can't be all the university and the professor's fault. The students bear some responsibility in this, too. I mean, they should know going in what they should expect from the faculty. If they research the UC schools, they kind of understand the culture there, and they choose that culture accordingly. And then, you know, once they know the orientation of the faculty there, shouldn't they exercise some intellectual curiosity to at least pursue other ideas?
Well, students, first of all, they're in a bit of a bind. I mean, if you live in California, you want to go to the state's university, Berkeley, UCLA. You know, those are the two of the most prestigious institutions in the state, and there's a very great temptation to just go there. So students, you know, they don't have a lot of choice. There are institutions they can go to. There are one or two small places in Southern California. They're expensive private places like Claremont McKenna, Pepperdine, and they'll meet a more balanced faculty there, and they'll meet more of a marketplace of ideas on campus that will teach them how to think by making them analyze different points of view. But it is too bad when students' natural choice, which is to go Berkeley or UCLA, lands them up in a situation where they're in something approaching an intellectual monopoly. But students do kick back. I mean, there's no question that students tune out radical professors very often. You hear a lot of stories about students saying, well, I know what I need to do for the final exam. Just regurgitate what Professor X says. That's what he wants to hear. And they know that if they challenge it, they got a very angry professor on their hands. Now, that's not a very good situation where kids actually, in a way, they are the ones who are, you know, in the educationally superior position. I mean, they're thinking for themselves and judging the professor. And so the professor is not teaching them in a way. They are learning from the one-sidedness of the professor, but they're in a way, they're exercising their own judgment more than he does.
That's right. And in a way, they're getting a better education doing that. Now, one of the statistics I found in your study, John, is that study time is down to 14 hours per week today from where it was in the 1960s, which was about 24 hours per week.
I know. That's a shocking statistic, isn't it?
It is. And so what is that telling us?
Well, what it tells you, I think, is that it's a lot easier for students to just listen to a radical professor, learn his basic message, which you can do in 5 minutes, and then regurgitate that back in the exam. And in other words, that doesn't take much independent thought. Now, in the old days, I mean, a professor would set you readings, books, written from both sides of the issue. Say you're dealing something like, say, welfare. Well, the different attitudes to welfare. Now, if you've got to read several books taking different attitudes, that's going to take you a lot of time. But if you know what the politically correct line is that your professor wants you to have or wants you to just throw back at him, that doesn't take you long. So it's understandable that kids basically study less because the professors are asking them to do less. If you ask students just believe what you're telling them, and do nothing more, you're not asking them to do very much.
Now, that's true. It's not very intellectually stimulating. My guest is Dr. John Ellis. We're talking about the corrupting effect of political activism in the University of California system. And, John, I'm going to take the other side of the argument just for this discussion here. And I'm going to say, well, wait a minute. Now, you're talking about, you know, the leftism that's out there. But really, aren't professors teaching responsibly in universities today? I would expect that out of a professor.
Oh, yes. No, I should have made clear that most professors are still in pretty good shape. There's no question about that. I mean, especially in the sciences, where you get a first-rate education if you take science or engineering in the University of California system. The problem is that once you get into the humanities and social sciences, you are in a politically corrupted zone. And a student can find good professors, no doubt about that. But he's got to look for them, and he's got to avoid a lot of automatic options that are on offer. So, you know, for example, sometimes what we said in the report was that it's very common that an introductory course in a department, like, you know, Sociology 1 or 101, the sort of gateway courses where you come into the study of that field in that way, these are often the most corrupt courses there are, so it's very difficult for students to get out of their way.
No, well, that's true, but the flip side of that is those gateway courses, as you call them, are typically not taught by a professor. They're usually taught by a grad student or a teaching assistant or something of that level.
Well, no, you wouldn't have the actual responsibility for the instruction by a grad student. You'd have discussion sections by a grad student, but the main lecturing would be done by a faculty member.
All right. Well, thank you for correcting me on that point. Now,
the other
point that I want to make here, though, is, you know, you're looking at your study. Shouldn't professors have academic freedom? I mean, you know, yes, they are liberal. They're biased to the left. That's true. But they should have the freedom to be able to pursue that.
Oh, yeah. No, academic freedom is a doctrine that says that you must have the freedom to teach a course as you think fit. But that doesn't mean that you can, in fact, teach it in such a way that your aim is to get students to believe what you want them to believe. I mean, you're perfectly entitled to say to students that, look, I view social questions from a left point of view, but you must give both sides. You must explain the issues. I mean, in other words, just to make students understand what it is to speak from the left point of view, you've got to explain to them clearly what the alternative is, because only that way do they understand what the professor's point of view means. So that should lead you straight away into an analysis of the pros and cons of the professor's point of view. It's when the professor takes the view that there are no pros and cons. There's one side that's right and the other side that's wrong. Then the class doesn't really get into any kind of in-depth analysis. It stays superficial.
That it does. My guest is Dr. John Ellis. So, John, you've stated the problem pretty eloquently. Now I throw it to you. What's the solution?
It's very, very difficult because this problem has been developing for about 30 to 40 years, depending on where you think it started. It's gone a long way. I mean, those figures I cited to you about the tilt of the faculty, I mean, it would have been a lot easier to deal with this when the tilt of the faculty was 3 or 4 to 1. Now that it's in the range of 10 to 1 and getting worse rapidly, it's much harder to deal with for the simple reason that anyone who wants a career on a university campus knows that it's going to be very, very tough to do that if he's not liberal. And so people get discouraged and go away, which means that there is not now a queue forming, so to speak, of people who would be appointable to the campus to diversify the faculty intellectually. All you can do, I think, is draw attention to the problem, say to the regents of the university or the governing board, just this is something you have to deal with before it gets any worse. And the university has to be brought to understand that it is approaching a crisis, that a monopoly of ideas on campus is unhealthy, it's not educational, it's going to lead to sloppiness and incompetence, it's going to lead to public lack of confidence in the university, it's going to lead increasingly to students thinking that UC education is not really worthwhile anymore. This thing has to be dealt with. Exactly how you do it, that's going to be extremely tough, very, very tough. It'll take a recognition by the university that it, collectively, that it is on the wrong path. And once it's made that recognition, then, you know, there are lots of things that can be done. But until the university accepts the fact that the status quo is unacceptable, it'll be very tough indeed for outsiders to do anything.
All right, John. Well, the California system used to be the paramount system and educational system in the United States, and it's a shame to have seen it gone this far. But what would you want the average listener to do? How can they impact change?
Well, they can certainly write to the regents and say what their experience is. I mean, an awful lot of parents have had their kids come home and tell them stories about what happens in class that are hair-raising. I mean, the parents are shocked. Now, when that happens, the parents should communicate to the regents and tell them that that they think they have reliable information from their own children as to what happens in classroom and that this is not what the academy should be.
And that's very fair. My guest has been Dr. John Ellis, author of the study A Crisis of Competence, The Corrupting Effect of Political Activism in the University of California. John, if people are intrigued by our discussion, they want to learn more about you, learn more about the study, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Well, there's the report that we've been talking about is on the Internet. Best place to go is to the website of our parent organization. I say parent organization because I'm the president of the California Association of Scholars, which is part of a nationwide organization called the National Association of Scholars. Now, the National Association of Scholars website is very simple. It's nas.org.
NAS.org. John, it has been a delight. Thank you so much for being my special guest here on The Bill Frank Show. We'll talk to you down the road.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
Well, thank you.